Well, have you seen your first robin yet? Whether you live in the heart of downtown Eau Claire or the cabin in the woods in Minocqua, the sights and sounds that have become the signs of spring include birds. Spring begins tomorrow, so what better time to talk about the birds that are moving back from the south and even those that have stuck it out through the winter. It's all about birds on a special joint edition of Route 51 and the West Side. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach. I host the weekly talk show on WPR's Western stations called The West Side, and today we add the audience of our central and northern Wisconsin stations on the weekly show Route 51, where regular host Shireen Seewert is taking a well-deserved week off. Joining us today, a pair of ornithologists. Steve Betchkel is an award-winning photojournalist and author of birding guides, including All This and Robins Too, a guide to 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. Steve Betchkel, welcome back to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks, Dean. Nice to be here.
Also joining us today is Jeanette Kelly. She's the director of the Citizen Science Center at Beaver Creek Reserve. It's a 400-acre nature center in central Eau Claire County. Jeanette Kelly, thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks so much for having me.
On both the West Side and Route 51, we usually invite your calls and emails. Today's a day we'd especially like to hear your questions and stories about birds and what feelings they trigger in your life. Call 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. So before we launch into our topic of birds, let's learn a bit more about the two of you. Jeanette Kelly, for those who might not be aware, can you talk about Beaver Creek Reserve?
Yeah, sure. So Beaver Creek Reserve is located just outside of Eau Claire. We're near the small town of Fall Creek, and we are a 400-plus acre nature reserve. We have a nature center. We have an observatory. We have a youth camp. We have overnight facilities. We are starting to prepare our new butterfly garden for this summer. And so we are a place where you can come and observe and enjoy and learn about nature through whether you're recreating outside or joining in one of our programs. We have a little bit for everybody here and cover all kinds of topics, not just the birds, but we do cover all kinds of topics. It's a great place to visit. If you've never come, please do stop in and see us.
You direct the Citizen Science Center at Beaver Creek. What is that?
Yeah, so the Citizen Science Center, the idea behind Citizen Science is to bring together the public and help them engage in scientific research. We believe that engaging people into these nature activities really kind of, you know, creates a strong bond into people's love of nature and then their willingness and desire to help protect and care for nature. So through the Citizen Science Center, we do all kinds of research projects where we take anyone who has an interest in nature. You don't have to have any sort of background in science or natural resources. We will do all the training for you and engage you in these programs and help us collect important scientific data, which then helps researchers and biologists with conservation efforts in natural resources. And we work on a wide variety of things, from butterflies to freshwater mussels, fireflies, aquatic plants, invasive species, and of course, a lot of the projects I lead, which are birds.
That's the director of the Citizen Science Center at Beaver Creek Reserve, Jeanette Kelly. We're tuned to our program about birds today on Route 51 and the West Side. 800-228-5615 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. 800-228-5615 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Steve Betchkel, let's turn to you. You're something of a renaissance man. You've had an award-winning career as a video journalist and have written books. Where does birding fit into all this?
Well, I started birdwatching when I was, or birding as we call it, when I was 11 years old. In fact, at a critical point when I was 6 years old, I made a decision between nature study and crime. My mom saved me from a life of crime. I was in a Piggly Wiggly in Racine. And I saw a bird book there that I wanted very badly. And I told my mother I wanted. She said, no, you can't have that bird book. And luckily, she caught me with that bird book in the line before we passed through the register and I was arrested. So I went on to become a bird watcher. And I've traveled all around the U.S. and the Western Hemisphere. I'm two birds short of 1,100 birds for a life list.
Wow.
I do breeding bird surveys for the federal government. I've done 25 years of a certain route here in Western Wisconsin. And I've done a lot of things to do with birds because I love them. I think they're worth noticing, enjoying, and preserving.
Yeah, you're not just tracking local birds, but you've done quite a bit of traveling to birdwatch.
Yeah, anywhere I go, I birdwatch. I've been to 49 states, haven't been to Hawaii yet, but all those countries, I keep a list of the birds I've seen. I keep a list of every county for birds. I keep a list of birds in my yard. I keep a list of birds at Beaver Creek. So I am very much into birds and other wildlife too, but just birds happen to be so alluring and attractive and easy to love.
Okay, so we call people who winter in the South snowbirds for a reason. They're just emulating several species that get out of Dodge before winter hits. Steve Betchkal, what are the main types of common summer birds that don't stick around for the winter here in central and western Wisconsin?
We have five types of migrants, Dean. We have birds that don't migrate at all, like chickadees and blue jays. We have birds that go long distances to the neotropics, down all the way to South America, sometimes even as far as Brazil or Uruguay or Paraguay. And we have birds that are medium-distant migrants that go to the Gulf, and then short-distant migrants, like the robins you mentioned. Sometimes robins don't leave at all. Sometimes they go to Illinois. So we have 400 bird species in the state of Wisconsin, and of those, more than half of them migrate. And we have a great variety in this state and a lot of conditions that influence why they move, where they go, and which ones stay during winter.
I asked at the opening of the show, have you seen your first robin, which is, I think, something that is a question that is asked in a lot of households. And I know that my late mother-in-law and my wife used to see who could see the first robin first. That was always kind of a contest every spring. Dennis in Baldwin is on with us, though, and he's got a comment on that. Dennis, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I think the robins are late this year. We haven't seen any with all the mild weather here by Baldwin, although I heard one this morning, and I know the blackbirds, red-winged blackbirds, are back, and then there's a flock of rusty blackbirds that stopped by my bird feeder during the snow we had. But this morning, there's a gentleman that always puts on a Hawaiian shirt when he sees his first robin, and sure enough, he was in the coffee shop this morning with his Hawaiian shirt on. So the robins are back, but aren't they late?
Are the robins late, Steve Betchkal?
In regional speak, no. You're perhaps in your yard, some are late, but robins are on schedule, as are most birds. We don't see that kind of variation very often. If there was a huge storm that would hold them back, that might be the case, or some other meteorological influence. But robins are a bird that move when they have to. And so a lot of times, if the winters are mild here in Wisconsin and there's open water, they'll stick around. If there's a food source like fruit, trees bearing fruit, they'll stick around. And a lot of times they travel only as far as they have to go. So if they haven't left the area, they go as far as they need to go, wherever it's open and those conditions exist, where there is water and food. So when they come back some years, they're here all winter. We have thousands in Eau Claire in some winters. And in other years, when it's really brutally cold, it takes them a little bit longer to get back. But on average, they are still here. I heard mine singing in the yard, too, this morning. So
I like the Hawaiian shirt idea. Anything to make me think more about spring is just fine. 800-228-5615, if you'd like to do like Dennis did, and join us and tell us if you've seen your first robin yet, or any other question or comment or story about your bird watching, 800-228-5615. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. So the timing of this program on the last day of winter is because those birds coming back in the spring are a real tangible sign of spring. Jeanette Kelly, what birds can we expect to see returning to central and western Wisconsin, and in what order?
Oh, boy, you're asking the hard question.
It's a big one.
Putting in the order. But yeah, a lot of birds are starting to come back. I was actually just looking at the phenology chart, which is something I'd like to talk about a little bit more here in a minute, and looking at the Beaver Creek phenology chart. And the phenology is looking at the timing of events in nature. Mm-hmm. So for instance, what time of year does the man put on his Hawaiian shirt in the coffee shop? That's a phenological event. We're looking at when the robin comes back, when that gentleman puts on his Hawaiian shirt. So here at Beaver Creek Reserve and a lot of places, people keep phenology charts. And so when I look at the phenology chart of birds that are coming back, the one that I'm really expecting to start having people see are the bluebirds. I haven't had anyone tell me yet they've seen a bluebird, but they should be knocking on our doors any day now. We'll also have some of the sparrows showing up around again, the chipping sparrows. I've heard there's been a few fox sparrows around, as the caller mentioned, the red-winged blackbirds. And then coming here pretty soon, we're also potentially going to start seeing some of the birds we think a little bit more of in summertime, like the eastern towhee and the gray catbird. They're not too far away. In April, we tend to start seeing some of those birds showing up. Also, if you haven't seen turkey vultures yet, I just saw one in southern Wisconsin this last weekend. So I know that they are starting to make their way. So definitely those turkey vultures and those bluebirds, I would expect to see anytime. And then once they start coming in, honestly, it just starts rolling. And it's like every day there's new birds showing up. But I want to, if I can, Dean, jump on that talk about phenology calendars
A
little bit more. When talking about this, you know, asking Steve, like, when does the robin show up and when do some of these birds show up? Keeping your own personal phenology chart is really, really fun. And if you're looking for more information on phenology, there was a blog article I wrote about it on Beaver Creek Reserve's blog site just this past winter. So you can learn some more about phenology. But what's really cool about that is, as Steve said, even with a lot of our variations in weather things, birds and animals still do what they do when the normal times they're going to do them. And I just, this weekend when I was visiting my mother, I was looking at the phenology bird book that my parents have kept since I was born back in the 70s. And we were looking at it and saying, the bluebird should be showing up any day now. The turkey vulture should show up, and there was the turkey vulture. We should hear the killdeer tomorrow, and sure enough, we heard the killdeer. And we looked to see, when do the wood ducks show up? Well, historically, for the last 40 years, my parents have the wood ducks showing up, you know, within a two-week span, according to their records. So it's really neat to keep track of that information in your own yard, and even, you know, statewide or wherever you travel, because it really is a cool prediction to say, tomorrow the chickadees start singing their breeding call, and you go outside and I'll be darned, there's the chickadee singing. And you can do this for all animals, but since we're talking birds.
Yeah. And I will have to ask, and we're due for a break, but it never occurred to me that turkey vultures were migratory birds. Where do they go?
Oh, Steve, Missouri. Tell us where they go.
They go to Missouri, Illinois, again, wherever it's mild enough to exist through the winter with a food source.
Interesting. All right. So birds are what we're talking about today on the West Side in Route 51. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Our guests are Steve Bechkel and Jeanette Kelly, a pair of birders, ornithologists. Jeanette Kelly is the director of the Citizen Science Center at Beaver Creek Reserve near Fall Creek. And Steve Bechkel is from Eau Claire, and he's author, broadcast journalist, and ornithologist. The author of All This and Robins Too, a guide to the 50 or so best places to find birds in Wisconsin. So, what's your spring bird story? We'd love to hear it. Have you seen a rare bird or some bird behavior that was different? Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You're tuned to the West Side and Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Looking ahead to next week, on the West Side, we'll drill down on how the newly announced FEMA mass vaccination clinic in Eau Claire is going to work and get some prognostication on the spring and summer tourism season. On Route 51, if you're feeling a little groggy from losing that hour of sleep last week, you can learn why by listening to a show about the science of sleep with polysomnographic technologist Tonda Nicholson of Aspirus Healthcare. Route 51 in central Wisconsin, West Side in western Wisconsin, a week from today on this station. We're back talking about birds in western and central Wisconsin, and we are talking with Steve Bechkel and Jeanette Kelly, a couple of ornithologists who know all about the birds in this area. And Steve Bechkel, one way we can influence nature a bit while giving ourselves a show is to feed the birds in our backyard. If you go to a place that sells bird seed, it can make your head spin to see all the choices. What's the best strategy to get a nice variety of birds in your backyard?
Annette Kelly. She's going to talk about that a little bit. I think she's an expert on that. So,
okay. Well, go ahead, Jeanette.
So this is a question that comes up quite a bit when I lead birding programs or talk to people. And I did actually, I had really good friends that owned Wild Birds Unlimited. So I did learn all about backyard bird feeding when I had worked for them years ago. I tell people that, like you say, you go into a bird feed store, you have tons of options. If you want to feed one thing and one thing only, I highly recommend black oil sunflower seed. That is going to provide you with the biggest diversity of birds. More birds like black oil sunflower than anything else. So if you want to feed one thing, that's what you should feed. If you want to feed two things, I would encourage black oil sunflower seed and suet. Suet is going to bring in some of, in the wintertime, it'll bring in some of those insectivores that are looking for high fats and high proteins. It'll also bring in the woodpeckers, the titmice, the nuthatches, all of those fun birds. The things that I would say to watch for is mixes. Now, I think bird food mixes are great because, again, you can have the black oil sunflower seed in it for a lot of the feeder birds. They'll kick out the white millet, which will go to the ground feeding birds like the mourning doves, the dark-eyed juncos, the sparrows. So there's really good mixes. But unfortunately, what we see in our mixes is a lot of filler or junk seed, and you really want to watch out for those. And some of those seeds you want to make sure are not in your mixes are milo, red millet. Now, white millet I mentioned earlier, and that's fine, but red millet, grass seed, wheat seed. Literally, those are filler seeds that nothing's going to eat. And you're wasting your money on them, and they're littering your ground and putting a bunch of junk on the ground. So you want to really look for clean mixes, things with black or striped sunflower, white millet, peanuts, cracked corn, safflower. Those are all fine foods to be feeding. But stay away from that red millet, the milo, the grass seed, the wheat seeds. It's pretty difficult to find clean mixes. I will say Pet Food Plus is a good place. In here in Eau Claire, I will put a shout out to them that they are a place you can buy clean mixes and you can also buy straight seeds. So just simply white millet or simply peanuts. So try to look for those types of things. The other thing I recommend, put out a bird bath. Birds need water, birds love water, not only in the summer, wintertime, those heated bird baths, birds will drink the water. Some of the different species will drink water. A lot of them will still bathe. And I promise you that they won't turn into little bird icicles in January when they're taking a bath.
800-228-5615 is the number to call to talk about birds, and our lines are absolutely full. So let's go to them. Let's find Tim now in Wood County. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, good morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was surprised this morning about 8 o'clock. I was getting ready to go outside, and I have a mud room here that overlooks the backyard. And I turned and looked out the window, and here there's a group of turkeys coming in through the yard. And I counted up to 25, and then right behind him was a tom turkey in full strut. And he had isolated one of the hens, and sure enough, she laid down, and they made happy right there in the sunshine this morning about 8 o'clock in my yard in Wood County. So I thought it was a little early for them to be breeding yet because I haven't heard any turkeys gobbling. But sure enough, there was a tom, and he had his hen picked out. And so I sat and kind of peeked at him.
Well, Tim, we all saw
it. I was surprised that, March 19th, and here they are breeding.
Hey, we all celebrate spring in different ways. Jeanette Kelly, is that unusual that turkeys would be breeding this early?
No, I don't think so. Lots of birds, if you start going outside and listening, and I actually haven't heard a turkey gobbling yet either, but lots of birds are starting to set up their territories, starting to do their breeding calls. There's a lot of courting activity starting out there. And as you said, spring is about to start. So love is in the air, I guess.
All right.
I gotta say something here. Dean, you said it too. Spring does not start tomorrow. Spring on the bird calendar started 3 weeks ago. It started with horned larks coming in, and it started with birds on the move into the state. A lot of Canada geese, sandhill cranes were showing up. Red-winged blackbirds were within the first week of March were in the state. And so I wonder how many people out there really are paying attention to the way migration works. You know, you've heard of the seven wonders of the world. Well, I believe, and I can say this with certainty, in fact, that migration is the greatest natural event on the planet. If you think about it, it takes place over 8.5 months of the year. And so it happens on every continent, including Antarctica. So all over the world, birds spend more than 2/3 of their lives flying, traveling. And so in a bird that weighs as much as 2 quarters sometimes travels 6,000 miles in a year. And this is an event that's not only worth recognizing and witnessing, but celebrating. And we have to realize that in our worlds, we don't see all this, but, you know, 3/4 of the year, birds are moving about because it's so important to them to get food in a certain place and to breed in a certain place.
All right. Let's go now back to the phones. Let's talk to Joseph in Ladysmith. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, I had a question about swans. I seen what appeared to be 4 of them, and I'm almost positive they were, except there was 2 of them that were jet black. And I was just wondering, is there variance in swans?
Joseph, are the other ones white?
Yes, the other 2 were white.
Okay. Steve Bechkel, any ideas on that
one? There are no black swans in the wild, and those are not happening. Those are escapees from somewhere. And there are some mute swans and other escapees. A black swan is another species, a European species. We have 2 swans in the state right now. The trumpeter swan, which was once an endangered species, in fact, the first species protected by the federal government, is now common in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. They used to be protected. You have yellow collars. Now they're everywhere. But as of last week, tundra swans were moving into the state. They have this very unusual migration. They migrate east to west. They actually come from Chesapeake Bay in Maryland and travel across the Great Lakes. So they come across Lake Michigan from the east and come in on the east side of our state, hit us, and continue on to the prairies. And those birds have been coming through in great numbers. And the difference, the main way to tell the difference between the two is the trumpeter swan has this very sonorous honking, and the tundra swan has this whining whistle, like, and you can hear them high when they're flying, and that's the best way to tell the two because they are otherwise pretty much all white and look the same.
They're so big, and it's such a treat when you do see them because they aren't here. It doesn't seem like they're here for long, right? They're moving. They're on their way to somewhere north of here generally, right?
The trumpeter swans are sticking around now. They are permanent in the state, and they're showing up all around western Wisconsin, central Wisconsin. And the tundra swans do not typically stay. They go and they breed in the Canadian prairies.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I just want to point out, Dean, the only time you would really see any sort of color variation in swans is when they have young. And the cygnets can be gray in their early plumage. They will turn to white. But if you see them in their family group still and you see one that's a little grayer, that's a young one. And I want to just point out, Steve and I have all kinds of birding opportunities coming up over the next several months. But one, just because of something Steve said about celebrating migration. Steve, if you want a quick touch on Welcome Back Bird Day coming up.
Yeah, May 19th, the third Wednesday of every month, we have Welcome Back Bird Day. Last year, we had it during the pandemic, but we kept a safe distance. We changed our rules a little bit. But basically, what we do on that day is we ask everybody to just get outside and see as many birds as they can and report back just what they see. You know, we're a bird city in Eau Claire and in other places too, Wausau, Stevens Point, Menominee, a lot of bird cities, 101 of them. And so part of our requirement is that we celebrate birds. We proclaim a International Migratory Bird Day, and we have a sponsored event. And I think it's important that we recognize through these kinds of things that birds are important to us and they affect the quality of our lives. So that's why we do that. Again, May 19th, all day. You can contact me or find out more about it through People That Bird here in Eau Claire.
We're talking about birds here on Route 51 in the West Side in a special joint edition. And we've obviously touched on a subject that people want to talk about. Let's move to Fred in Wisconsin Rapids. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
Hi. Thanks, guys. I'm going to jump around a little bit, a few observations. This winter, we had 10 or 12 doves winter over. I don't know if that's common or not. And they also seem to pair off, and I wonder if they keep their bonds over the winter. We did not see any blue jays this winter, which was surprising. We saw a lot of titmice, which we normally don't see. One of the things on food that I wanted to mention is how important it is to put soot out. And we go to a butcher shop and get soot in 3-4 pound packages, and we just put it out in orange mesh bags. And it really draws the nuthatches, the chickadees, all the different woodpeckers in. And I filled one orange bag, and it lasted the whole winter. It's still hanging out there right now. So those are just some of the observations that I wanted to point out. Yes. Oh, and then the juncos are back.
Thank you, so Fred.
They are migrating.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. And Jeanette, we talked about the phrenology before and keeping track, and that it really doesn't vary too much. But, you know, Fred, as I think most of us have the experience of, hey, we didn't see as many of these this year as we did last year. Is that a sign of concern, or is it just something different in our observation? What's the reason for that?
I think that that's a great observation. When you're used to seeing something and you suddenly aren't seeing it, I think it's a great observation. And I think it's definitely something to ask about, because the truth of the matter is maybe it's just normal and that's just the way it is that year, or perhaps there is a problem. And historically, that's the way we have discovered issues with birds, especially birds that migrate, is suddenly we're not seeing all these birds come back on migration, or we're not seeing birds where we used to see them. So I think it's always a good observation and an important question to ask about. This question came up a lot this winter, and I know I had talked with one of the TV stations this winter about it too, because so many people were inquiring, where's all the birds, or, you know, why do I see these birds and not these birds? This year, we had an incredibly mild winter. I know southern Wisconsin had more snow than central Wisconsin did, but it was a very mild winter. Here in Eau Claire, we had maybe like, I don't even think we had a solid month of good snow on the ground. So there is a lot of natural food out there. One thing to remember, we love birds, and we, as a general, I'm speaking, the public, love to feed birds. But I hate to tell all of you this, they don't actually need us. We mostly feed birds. Really, it's purely for our enjoyment. So I hate to break your hearts there. And I'm not saying bird feeding is a bad thing by any means. But the reality is birds have survived for a very long time without us feeding them. And so when there's a lot of natural food sources available, birds will tend to go to their natural food sources. Even this winter, if there was open water and they've got water and food, they don't have a reason to come into feeders. Like I said, that doesn't mean you should stop. I think bird feeding is excellent. One big reason, because of the enjoyment and education it provides for us, which makes us more likely to support birds and support conservation efforts. So I do think it's very important. Mourning doves, actually, he mentioned mourning doves. Mourning doves are around all year. Maybe for years past, for some reason, you haven't had them, but we do tend to see them throughout the year. And blue jays, that's an interesting one, because I had huge numbers of blue jays this year. So, you know, there is just a lot of variation sometimes in years. There are eruptive species that come in big groups in the state, usually from up north when they have a lack of food source up north. Blue jays, that's not necessarily an eruptive species. They are here year round. But, you know, for some reason, birds just, they do what they do, and they're going to go where they're happy for some reason. So there definitely can be variability. But again, that's another reason why it's very interesting to keep track of what you're seeing in your own yard.
So it's very comforting to know that when I forget to put the bird seed out for a week, that they're probably okay. But Steve Betchkal, I'm wondering, so if that's not going to deeply impact, What are the threats to birds? What are the threats to migratory species, or even those that don't tend to move around a lot? You know, what are things that need to happen in order to protect some of these birds that we love?
We're talking about migratory birds here, birds that are very fragile, that are vulnerable, that are already facing this humongous journey, this long trek, and really people don't understand the stressors they're putting upon birds. You look at how we unwittingly throw these obstacles into the path of migrant birds. We have urban sprawl and habitat destruction, not only in the tropics, but here when we tear down a place that's a forest and turn it into a parking lot. We have skyscrapers, cell towers, picture windows. We have neonicotinoids and other toxins that affect birds. We have beach development. We have people allowing their house cats out of doors. And house cats, we believe, is the number one unnatural cause of bird mortality in the U.S. Maybe 1.4 to 4 billion birds a year are killed by house cats, by people letting their house cats out of doors. And we don't even think about that. One third of the population has a cat. One out of every three households, according to numbers here, more than dogs. And if you take that into consideration, it's easy to understand how if you let one cat outdoors, how bad that is on the populations. But Audubon Society has just labeled climate crisis as the number one planetary threat to birds. And so when we talk about birds like that caller we just had in Wisconsin Rapids, he's talking about titmice. Well, we see birds changing their winter behavior, their phenology, because the climate is softening up a little bit. We have more Carolina wrens and summer tanagers and other southern birds that are showing up in the state. And one of the reasons titmice may be more common in Wisconsin Rapids is because it's milder and they've had a chance to winter this out. You don't understand this, folks, but we didn't have cardinals here in 1950. There were no cardinals in Eau Claire and Wausau and Stevens Point. They were in Illinois, and bird feeding brought them north. And so they acclimated and they developed a relationship with humans. Now, with climate change, we could see things happening like, and I want you to consider this seriously, in 30 years, if the temperature went up, according to some projections, no more bald eagles in Wisconsin, no more loons in Wisconsin, no more house wrens, no more Baltimore Orioles. The habitat for those birds would be effectively driven out of the state when the trees that support them die. We wouldn't have that kind of habitat. And so when we talk about climate crisis, I don't think people yet have begun to register how important and how critical this issue is.
That's the voice of Steve Bechkel. He is broadcast journalist, author, and ornithologist. Also with us, ornithologist and director of the Citizen Science Center at Beaver Creek Reserve, Jeanette Kelly. Our topic, of course, is birds, and we do have a couple of lines open now, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. And email us as well, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You're tuned to The West Side and Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, the COVID-19 pandemic has brought changes to our health, to Wisconsin businesses, to state and local politics, to education, sports, and much more. Join WPR reporters in a free online conversation on what they're learning about the far-reaching effects of the pandemic. WPR News Director Noah Ovshinsky hosts the Reporter Roundtable Thursday, April 8th at noon. You can submit your questions during the live virtual event, and you'll hear from reporter Shemaine Mills on vaccines and testing, Madeline Fox on K-12 education, Rich Kramer on higher education, and Laura White on politics. It's a WPR Reporters Roundtable, April 8th at noon, and you can register by going to WPR.org and find the event atop the announcements section in the right column. We're back talking birds of western and central Wisconsin, and we'll get back to the phones in a second, but when I was a kid on the farm in Barron County, this was a long, long time ago, we'd see bluebirds pretty regularly. And then as an adult, I went a long time without seeing one. Lately, there have been efforts to build up the bluebird population. I've got three bluebird houses on my property, and once or twice, bluebirds have actually nested there, but it's sure not a sure thing. Steve Bechkel, what makes attracting bluebirds so tricky? Steve, you're muted. Steve, you're on mute.
I'm going to toss this to Jeanette.
All right, fair enough. Well, good enough. It was a good thing you were muted then. Jeanette, let's go ahead and talk about bluebirds.
Yeah, so bluebirds, I was just double checking my Beaver Creek's phenology. And like I had said before, bluebirds should be showing up anytime. In 2008, they showed up on 319 and they did again just a few years ago on 319. So bluebirds may be showing up today. Keep your eyes open. So bluebirds, people love bluebirds, and they're a blue bird, which is somewhat rare amongst birds. We have a few bluebirds, and here in the state, we're lucky actually in the summertime to have the indigo bunting and the blue jay and a bluebird, so we get a handful of bluebirds. So they are really beautiful, and people love them. You are correct that their populations declined significantly, and back 40, 50 years ago, their population was pretty much cut in half. And a lot of that was the main reason any animals become, their population starts to decline. One of the number one causes is habitat loss. And so habitat loss is huge, huge. And for bluebirds, a lot of that habitat loss came from loss of cavities to build their nest in. They are what we call secondary cavity nesters. So they nest in cavities, but they don't have the ability or the adaptations like a woodpecker to create their own cavity. So they have to take over holes or cavities made by other birds, made by woodpeckers or other animals, or cracks in a tree or where a tree branch broke off and formed a cavity. So they need something to live in. And with urbanization and developments and the idea that dead trees are bad and ripping out old fence posts, they lost a lot of habitat. Now, there's been a big push over the last few decades to really support bluebirds. And a big effort was put into putting up bluebird houses. And you can attract bluebirds to your yard by putting up a bluebird house also. Now, I want to tell you that bluebirds really like open areas. They like short grass. They like open areas. If you live in the middle of the woods, unlikely you're going to get bluebirds. If you live on or near a golf course, very good chance you're going to have bluebirds. So they like open areas, they like short grass, and that's because they spend a lot of time foraging on the ground. So they're going to be collecting insects on the ground. So they like those open areas. They also need a few places to perch. So make sure there's either a snag or a fence post or something close to a house that they can perch on. So having that type of habitat, that open habitat, putting up a nest box is likely to attract the bluebirds to your yard. Now, one thing to, another thing you can do for them as far as if you want to try to feed them something, you know, they are insectivores, so they're not going to come to your seed at your feeder, but you can introduce and feed mealworms to them. And they will definitely take mealworms when they are nesting. And I do recommend live mealworms, not feeding the dried ones, but live ones seem to be a lot more successful. One, because when they're wiggling around, you can they attract the bluebirds. And that is a really fun thing to feed, especially when they have young and they're coming and collecting the mealworms and taking them back and feeding their young. So putting up a bluebird house, if you've got a good property, an appropriate property for them, and feeding mealworms are a good way to attract them to your yard. One thing to keep in mind with them is you want to have some, you should look up specifics on how to build a bluebird house if you're going to build one, because there is competition with other birds, chickadees, wrens, tree swallows, how things that will come and compete with them for their nest boxes. So you want to try to build a pretty specific nest box for bluebirds.
Speaking of nest boxes, Glenn in Eau Claire called asking, is it too late to clean out bluebird or wren nests? The fact that your phrenology says they're coming today, probably not.
No, go ahead and clean them out. And realistically, bluebirds and wrens and a lot of those birds, they will lay more than one clutch. So they will have more than one nest throughout the summer. So even if you don't get this first round of birds, you are likely to get that next round of birds. So even if you don't get to it this weekend or next weekend, still do it. And when you do that, make sure you go out, clean out everything out of there. I'm going to be honest with you, Dean. Nest boxes are gross. Birds' nests are gross. They truly are.
Oh, yeah. Wear gloves when you do this. Yeah.
When they are done using nests, the nest is disgusting. So take a putty knife or a paint scraper, scrape out everything in that nest, clean it out, and make sure you've got it closed back up and ready for those birds.
Before we leave the topic of bluebirds, Jeanette Kelly, Beaver Creek Reserve has a bluebird restoration project. Can you tell us about the scope of that?
Yes. So for 10 years, 15 years or more, Beaver Creek Reserve Citizen Science Center has been working with volunteers throughout the county to help put up bluebird trails. And by that, I mean, you're putting up a trail of 10 or more bluebird houses and having volunteers go out and monitor those bluebird nest boxes. Now, this is something that you could get involved with through Beaver Creek Reserve, or you could do on your own. There's an organization in Wisconsin something called Bluebird Restoration Association of Wisconsin. You can go to their website and learn a lot of information about setting up bluebird houses and how to monitor them. And it is important to monitor them. And the trails that Beaver Creek has, we have three on golf courses. I mentioned golf courses earlier are honestly really good habitat for bluebirds. Mm-hmm. We also have a trail near here at Beaver Creek Reserve. And we have volunteers that go out and monitor them. And what they do is they clean out the boxes, make sure the boxes are in good shape. They watch the boxes to see when the birds come back. They see how many eggs they lay, how many of those eggs hatch, and how many of those young fledge. That's all really important information, especially for if birds are in decline or are in peril. We can have that information to know where in their life cycle there might be problems occurring. So honestly, nest box monitoring is so fun. And you can safely do it without disturbing the nest. And for all those parents out there that might have said this to their kids, it's not true that if you touch the nest or the eggs, it's not true that the birds won't come back. They will. You need to do it carefully and respectfully, but it is something that you can safely do. And again, it's just a really cool thing to do for adults and kids and families to put up nest boxes and monitor them. So contact Beaver Creek Reserve or check out the Bluebird Restoration Association of Wisconsin and learn about monitoring, setting up and monitoring bluebird nest boxes.
All right, lines have filled back up. Let's get to them. Let's go to Amy in Wausau. Amy, thanks for joining us, and thanks for waiting.
Thank you. Just wanted to give a heads up to birders and others who might be interested in indoor bird watching. There's an exhibition on view right now in Wausau, the Lee Yockey Woodson Art Museum, mm-hmm. called Beyond Artworks, Artists and Their Stories, and it features artwork from the museum's collection, which strives to set the standard for avian art. And there are artworks and a rare oil painting by John James Audubon, and as well as artwork by the Wyeth painters, N.C. Wyeth, Andrew Wyeth, and Jamie Wyeth. So lots of options this spring.
Speaking of setting the standard, the Lee Yockey Woodson Art Museum, spectacular ongoing display of bird art, Owen Grammy and others. If you haven't been there, you really owe it to yourself to do that. Let's move to another call. Let's go to Tim in Eau Claire area. Tim, go ahead.
Hi. I have an odd observation. In the winter or in the fall around Eau Claire, it seems like the geese go north. And in the summertime, or in the spring, it seems like they go south. I have a pretty good understanding of which way is north and which way is south. And it just seems odd. Are they going to meet up somewhere before they go south? Is there some sort of goose party somewhere that we're missing?
I've seen that too, though. I've seen where the geese are not, you know, going straight north, but might be going east-west, or straight south, might be going east-west or north. What can account for that, Steve Bechkel?
There are two answers to that. One is that geese forage in different places than they spend the night. They might spend the night someplace safe on a pond where there are no predators, and then they take off and go to a field. You might see birds going to a place to feed. Another is that geese go different places to molt. And so geese populations will get up and move to very safe and secure places to molt later in the summer. And so that may mean moving north. And when they do that, they are gone for a couple of weeks because they can't fly, and then they come back south again and disperse in different ways. So that is a good observation. And what you're seeing is a micro migration, a little bit of behavior that is not obvious when you see these birds going in these odd directions.
All right, let's move to Jan in Laval. Jan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. I would just like to give a shout out to the deer hunters out there. We were talking about feeding birds earlier and feeding suet. And about 10 years ago, we started, after we have our deer tested for CWD, we save the tallow and run it through a grinder, and then we freeze it in Dixie cups and put it in a suet feeder out on the deck. And the birds will leave the commercial suet alone until the deer tallow is all gone. So it's a good way to use up the tallow, and the birds benefit.
Jeanette Kelly, good idea?
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I'm glad I thought about that when that previous call came in. So thank you then now for calling back and bringing that up. Yeah, that is a great thing. And again, anytime you can provide a natural resource is definitely better for wildlife. So I love that idea. And I know I grew up with seeing people putting the rib cage out of deer, and you could see the chickadees picking through the ribs and picking out the fat. So yeah, that's a great, great full utilization of the animal that you're hunting. So I love that. Dean, if I can just, you know, we're talking a lot about, you know, how to, things you can do in your backyard and ways to better for the birds. And I would love to just touch on the idea. I know it's something that is making me stand up on my soapbox lately. And I know it's an interest of Steve's also, as far as really creating a habitat in your backyard for birds and wildlife. And I know Steve's mentioned sometimes the connectedness and thinking about things. And I think that's really important in our own yards and when we're trying to make better habitats for animals and birds, and thinking about just like hanging up the tallow from your deer, like what can I do that's better for the animals? And I want to just, especially because we talked about bluebirds, something to think about is there's a ton of chemicals we utilize on our properties. And for birds like bluebirds that eat insects, when we're spraying all those insecticides out there, we're actually destroying the food of the birds that we really want in our yard. So for the actions that we do, we've got to think about all the connections that happen. And I know Steve is talking a lot about, and Steve does a great talk about his own personal property and the number of birds that he sees in his yard through the natural environment he has created in his yard. And also through no mowing. That's a big kick of mine lately, where areas that you don't need to mow, this idea of a huge open lawn is very European. And granted, it works well for some animals like bluebirds, but for majority of animals, having huge mowed lawns is really an ecological dead zone. I just want to say I have a very small ditch in front of my yard, maybe 15 feet wide and 60 feet long. It's just the ditch on the roadside. When we moved into that house, that was a mowed ditch, and we stopped mowing it 10 years ago. And we started collecting seeds from native plants and buying native plants. Beaver Creek Reserve does an excellent native plant sale, which is starting up here on April 26th, and buying plants from the plant sale. And now 10 years later, I have over 36 plants that bloom in that ditch, all native wild plants, where the bumblebees are in the harebells and the hummingbirds come to the pentstemon, and the monarchs are on the milkweed, and the goldfinches get the fluff from the thistle. So even that little stretch, you don't need a huge area. I'm not saying don't mow your whole yard or convert your whole yard wild, but a little bit can do a lot for our wildlife and our birds.
Boy, this time has flown by. Steve Batchkill, I know you're involved in a project having to do with the book Wisconsin's Favorite Bird Haunts and making it more accessible and updating it. Can you talk a little bit about that as we wrap up?
Yeah, it's a 60-year-old book. It's a classic. It was originally written by Sam Robbins, and we are turning it into an online version. So it is going to be hopefully the best state resource for bird finding in the whole U.S. when we're done, because we've borrowed on other ideas from other states, and we'll probably have 1,000 sites in it. Right now we're composing those sites. There are authors in every county writing those sites, including Eau Claire and Marathon and Portage and Dunn, and so we're working on that right now and hope to have it out in the winter.
Yeah, Sam,
I wanted to promote a couple other things.
Sure,
really quick,
please.
I am going to be teaching a class through the UW Extension on bird feeding, and it will include some bird identification and keeping a list of yard birds. And we'll be talking about the exact things that Jeanette did, planting for birds and other things like that. And if you put into your browser UWEC Backyard Birding, you can find it. There are still openings that will begin on March 24th. And that would be a very educational class for anybody who wants to get involved. It's 4 consecutive Wednesday nights.
And
Dean, if I could point out a couple other opportunities too, like I said,
in about
Steve
15 seconds, if you could.
Lots of other things coming up. The Wisconsin Crane Count is coming up in April, April 17th. So if you're interested talking about cranes, migration, participating in citizen science, you can Google Wisconsin Crane Count and find your county coordinator and get signed up for the Crane Count on April 17th. We mentioned the Welcome Back Bird Day and Steve's program. There's also Beaver Creek has some bird programs going on now. I've got one next week on the American Kestrel and in April about some birds at your feeder. So check out the Beaver Creek Reserve website also. And also keep in mind, if you're not familiar with Natural Resources Foundation, they lead a lot of field trips and they just put out their field trip listing. And there are some excellent birding opportunities with the Natural Resources Foundation where you get to work with other, with experts and very knowledgeable people on birds. And they are so much fun. I highly recommend those too.
Ornithologist Steve Betchkel, Jeanette Kelly, thanks for joining us today. Catherine Thomas produced today's show. Kate Spranger manages the archives. Tommy McGowan has publicity duties. And Rick Ryer is our technical producer today. Dean Kallenbach here. Thanks for joining us on Wisconsin Public Radio.